Good evening and welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host, and my co-host from Imagine Up Publicity, Lila Jones is with me. So good evening, everyone, and we welcome you to another edition to Shattered Lives. And I have to say that I've been waiting for our particular guest to join us this evening. I think since this past spring, he is that busy and that popular, and certainly a renowned expert in his field. Before I bring him on, I'll say good evening to my co-host, Delilah. How are you, Delilah? What's going on?
Hi, Donna. Just working away like a usual Saturday. Happy to be here, and I'm really excited about this show. I think this is probably one of the most important shows that we've done in a long time, although they're all important. The information that we get from the guests is just absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, I hope we have a lot of listeners to this one. I think it's going to be so important.
Right. And you forgot to say the blog I do as a follow-up is phenomenal too, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. Yes, that part is really challenging, and I love doing that because I love to be able to showcase our guests. So without further ado, James Holler Jr., or athlete, he likes to be called Jim. Jim has served as the chief of police for 16 years in the Liberty Township Police Department in Adams County, Pennsylvania, and he's an internationally known speaker specializing in crimes against children. And he honed his skills and became very much an active advocate with Internet Crimes Against Children investigator, ACAC, and has conducted proactive Internet investigations, making multiple arrests for possession of child pornography and undercover chat-related arrests for soliciting sex from a minor. And one thing that is very clear when you see this gentleman do a presentation in person, he, as his bio says, he doesn't hold back. He makes no bones about his mission is to help parents protect their kids. And his presentations are very dynamic. He doesn't get up and talk behind a podium. He continually paces throughout the whole length of the stage, very animated, very storytelling. So we were fascinated, and I'm so glad to have him. So without further ado, Jim, thank you so much for being on Shattered Lives. It's a pleasure to have you this evening.
Good evening. It's great to be here.
Well, good. We're so glad to have you. And I know this is a little bit of a different venue, but I know we'll do just fine. This is a huge topic for sure, and you have a multitude of information. But I think probably the best way to start is in the beginning, and maybe if you can tell us a bit of your background in terms of how you got into this specialized field and your background with the Internet Crimes Against Children, that might be a good place for us to start.
Sure. Yeah, in our department, we're a small rural department, actually outside of Gettysburg, probably an hour or so from D.C., an hour or so from Baltimore. And over the years, of course, with the Internet and the popularity of the Internet and cell phones and all the technology and advancing, we saw more and more cases involving Internet crimes, specifically with children, and how the molesters were using the tools to try to meet with kids. So we ended up sending myself and a couple of the other guys to the specialized training, which was ICAC, the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. Every state's got a task force, and then the individual departments throughout your counties or cities become affiliate members of the task force themselves. And basically what the task force does is provides the training and the expertise and the computers and stuff to be able to do these types of investigations. So we started out doing the getting the basic information or knowledge to be able to conduct some of these investigations, especially with child pornography. And then as time permitted, we started becoming more proactive, however quickly became reactive, if that makes any sense, because the more proactive you are, you bring publicity to the topic, which was great. I mean, publicity needs to be out there, and parents need to be educated. And then with that education, parents saw, hey, this is happening to my kid, my kids. And so then you quickly become reactive with the investigation. So, I mean, it's just so prevalent throughout the world, especially here in the States, but it's all over. One of the proactive investigations we did was the online chats. We started out with that. And probably for most people, you're familiar with the online chats and watching a couple of the TV shows last couple of years, The Catch the Predator, where you know the guys would get online into a chat room and meet up with what they thought was a child, and then would meet up with them and quickly become arrested. The difference between what they did, what you saw on TV, and what happens in real life is for the most part, when they did the chats, when NBC did the chats, they used non-law enforcement agencies for the most part. Sometimes they did, but for the most part they didn't. And the differences between the two is they could be more forward in their chats. And what I mean by that is and you go into a chat room with a screen name. If we're doing an undercover investigation, we don't say anything to anybody. I let them initiate a conversation with me. I want to establish that, you know, whatever persona I'm pretending to be, a 13-year-old female or male, I want to establish that right off the bat so they know that they're communicating with an underage child. And then I want them to bring up meeting. I want them to bring up having sex or, you know, any illegal activity. With the Catch the Predator series, they would bring this up. So it was easier for them to bring these guys in. However, I've had people ask, you know, how prevalent is this? I mean, with all the publicity, with the TV show and stuff.
Right.
And I always use the analogy of if you ever take your kids to a farm pond that's got a lot of bluegill in it, and you throw a hook out with a worm or whatever, you're going to catch a fish right away. If you throw the same hook out without any bait, you're still going to catch a bluegill. I mean, it's just that prevalent, unfortunately, throughout the states that any child at any time of the day, on any day of the week, if they go into even a teen chat site that's just specifically says for teens, they will eventually meet an adult male or an adult female. I mean, it's just that prevalent. And I'll give you an example. We have to take a week-long class to learn how to do the online chats. And I can remember on getting out of school on Friday, getting back to the office and setting up the computer equipment and stuff because I was all excited about going fishing to see who we could catch here. And we were supposed to write out our persona, you know, our hair color, eye color, likes, dislikes, whatever child that we were pretending to be. And I didn't do that.
Is that difficult, Jim? I mean, be able to take on these very young personas as a, you know, as a male in your 50s or whatever to be a 13-year-old.
Very much so. Now, I've got three kids, and they're all grown, but I got two daughters, and I'm like, you know, I should be able to remember back when they were 13 and, you know, what they were interested in and stuff. So anyways, I go online, and within 30 seconds, and I'm a 13-year-old female from Gettysburg. Within 30 seconds, I've got a guy that asked me my age, sex, and location, so I tell them, so I establish that. He's a 50-some-year-old man from Baltimore. And then his very next question was, what is your breast size? And so what's wild about this is you've got to be thinking that you could have a truly innocent 13-year-old girl that's in a teen chat site thinking that she's just going to meet other teens, and then all of a sudden you've got an adult male asking her breast size. So I was stumped, okay, because of the fact of I didn't really remember what breast sizes come in. small, medium, large, extra large, whatever. And I ended up typing double D in real, and not thinking about this, but I realized real quick that that's probably pretty big for a 13-year-old because the guy was really sexually active after, or interested after that. So I had a breast reduction over the years to seek up. And and then I've learned that's probably a little bit too big for a 13-year-old. But anyways, to give you an example, though, okay, before we go on, is one of the last guys that we arrested who's in federal prison as we speak. Initially in the chats, and literally I've got probably 6 to 10 conversations going on at one time of guys that want to meet and want to have sex with this 13-year-old. I mean, it's just that prevalent. And you try to narrow these down. So, you know, I don't want to waste time with guys that aren't going to come and meet and stuff. So anyways, I meet this guy. He's initially almost too nice, and I just didn't want to mess with him because he wasn't talking about sex and, you know, whatever. But then he changed his tune, and he started talking about wanting to meet and have sex and so on, and some really raunchy sexual torture type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people have asked me, well, you know, what 13-year-old in the right mind would ever even want to meet a guy like this? I mean, that's talking about tying this kid up and doing all this stuff. But what I didn't mention is when he picked me up at my grandparents' house, that was always the lie that we were using, that he was going to get my nails done, my toenails, fingernails, get my hair done. He was going to buy me new clothes, silk pajamas, and all of this really cool stuff. And most kids, especially at that age, they're not thinking about the bad stuff. They're thinking about, boy, this guy's really going to do a lot of cool stuff for me. And so
that's part of the seduction process, is that right?
Exactly. I mean, that's just, you know, for kids, that's a cool thing. You start buying me stuff or, you know, talking nice things about me or whatever. So this particular guy, the week before our date night, and the date night was when, of course, it worked out for our schedule for him to come up, and, of course, it works out for his schedule. I've got enough to arrest this guy. He just needs to show up. But I still need to play with him, chat with him, you know, for the couple days before the date night, because if I just stop chatting, he's really going to be suspicious.
Right.
So about a week before, we're chatting, and all of a sudden he stops. He stays in the chat room, but he stops chatting. And I'm like, oh, what's going on, you know, and going back and forth. And then finally he comes back and says, oh, you're a cop. I don't want to talk to you anymore. Which really freaked me out a little bit, because it was obvious in his interactions that I'd had with him for about 2 week or 3 week period that he was meeting other kids and having sex with other kids. I mean, it was just obvious to me. So I wanted this guy bad. So kind of, you know, I was afraid I was going to lose him. So I ended up typing real fast. If you remember back as a kid, you got angry with your parents, you told them you hated them and stuff. And so I started typing real fast. I said, I thought you loved me and you cared for me, da da da, I hate you, I hate you, I hope you die, and I got offline. And I'm hoping that this is going to work. That
it's going to reel it in, huh?
Exactly. So the next night I waited 24 hours, got back online. 5-10 minutes later, he comes back and says, oh, I'm really sorry, I got to protect myself, da 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 da. So I had him. So the night before date night, it was a Friday night, he's going down a checklist, and this is what, you know, really made me think of the fact that he's seeing other kids, because he's getting me confused with other kids. You know, hair color, eye color. He asked me what my breast size was, and I said, C cup. And he said, C what? And that freaked me out, because no one had ever asked me that question before. So I'm like, I don't, you know, it was bad enough to remember a C cup, let alone is there something else associated to this?
Yeah.
So I called home real quick and asked my wife, you know, is there a number associated to this or what? And, you know, I guess there is. And, you know, I gave him the number and stuff. And then he asked me my panty size. He asked me if my hymen was still intact. And I said, all along, I would tell these guys I was a virgin. So I responded back that I was a virgin. And
right.
He goes, well, you know, that doesn't mean anything, because you could have torn your hymen playing sports or riding a bicycle. And that's the scary thing is, you know, thinking about these molesters is this guy in particular and all of them. I mean, they know what they want. And if this guy liked 13-year-old girls, he knew anything and everything about 13-year-old girls, from, you know, body parts to clothing to music to whatever. And they're mm-hmm. skilled in what they do. And that's the scary thing for our kids, because they get sucked in so easily because of these individuals knowing what they want.
Yeah. When you talked about the checklist, what are you referring to so that our audience might know?
Well, I mean, his checklist, I think, was the checklist of just trying to get his victim lined up, okay? And I think he was seeing so many kids as far as, okay, I want to remind myself of the hair color, eye color, and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Keeping track of how many kids do they do this with simultaneously? I mean, it must be confusing.
A lot. We looked at his computer and we did search warrant stuff like we always do, and there were multiple contacts of kids. And I mean, we tried to narrow that down, to try to find out who the real victims were.
Yeah.
And I mean, we did a few. And there were a lot that we just couldn't do, but I'm sure. I mean, there were many, many kids.
So what happened on date night?
Date night's really cool because you know, he's all excited because he's thinking he's going to have sex with a 13-year-old, and we would always, off the interstate, there was a fireworks store, and there was an old house that backed up to the rear of the fireworks store, and my lie was my grandparents lived there. My parents were out of town, and I'm spending the weekend at my grandparents' house, and they knew that I'm going to spend Saturday night and Sunday at a friend's house. So when this guy pulls in, I would always tell him, pull into the back of the fireworks store. And then as soon as we saw the car pull in, and at that point, most of these guys would send me a picture of themselves. And I only had one that did not send a picture, but he still gave us a good description of his vehicle. So as soon as that vehicle, or if I was, and usually I was in the parking lot waiting for him to pull in so I could ID him. And they pull around to the back, and that's when they were met with many, many cops with nice presents, like in the form of silver bracelets. To give them, and you know, most of them would break down and cry. And
was he surprised?
Oh yes, yeah. And you know, most of them always had presents. They were really cool about what they did. And, you know, they, you know, from necklaces to sex toys to, you know, CDs or whatever. I mean, they would bring little toys and stuff to help out with their adventures. But
right.
Fortunately, we were able to stop that. Yeah. And what was wild is when we would have to do those search warrants that later on that night, and most of these guys would come up from the Baltimore area because we were so close to Baltimore, and we had some local, but you know, we'd be doing search warrants 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, and the majority of them were married. I mean, we had computer programmers, we had Department of Justice guys, we had guys with really good jobs, and for the most part, when we knocked on the door at midnight, their wives had no idea. I really believe some of them, I had gut feelings, they knew what was going on, but a lot of them just did not. And all they would tell me is, I knew he spent a lot of time on the computer late at night. And I tell parents, I mean, that's a red flag for your kids, but mm-hmm. it also should be a red flag for all of us. And it doesn't mean someone's having an affair. It doesn't mean someone's, you know, engaged in sexual activity with kids. It doesn't mean any of that, but a red flag should. And,
well, what can you go into a bit about the stats with regard to the prevalence and maybe, you know, some tips to alert parents with regard to what happens here? And we could certainly go into the different, because there are distinct differences between the different types of people who molest too, especially two main types, right?
Yes, and the stats are to me, they're alarming. One in four girls are sexually assaulted before they reach the age of 18. One in six boys are the same. And I really truly believe that the boy number, the one in six, should be probably more like the one in four, if not one in three. It's harder to for boys to disclose sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
The whole stigma is attached to it and stuff. And depending on how they're manipulated by, you know, a coach or a preacher or whoever, it's just harder for them to come out and tell. And what's scary about those stats, and you know, when I, especially when I've got an audience of people, and I tell people, you know, a handful of you were victims based on the stats, and I commend people because, I mean, you know, a lot of people have become survivors, and that's what it's all about. But unfortunately, those stats are the only case; those are the cases that we know about, the 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys. And that's scary when you think about it, is how many kids, how many adults out there that have never come forward and told their story.
Right.
And I know this, I mean, when I do this presentation live, how many people, usually at least one, if not more, will come up every presentation and say, I'm one of those. I've never told anybody. You know,
wow.
They're afraid of destroying their family or, you know, whatever the situation may have been, you know, they've held that into adulthood. And it's scary.
And how does that make you feel? How powerful that must be that you, you know, they're coming out to you after all these years.
Sure. And it does. And I commend them because of the fact, and most of them are, you know, most of the people I work with a lot of times are teach to or service providers.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people that are in the field of helping kids, and even though they haven't told their story, they're still, I mean, they're using what happened to them to help them do their job, and I commend them for being able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yeah, I mean, it's just scary. You know, that's a lot of kids. Most of these kids are abused by someone they know. We used to teach the Stranger Danger programs, which I still think we need to include. Only about 10% of perpetrators are going to actually be strangers. And a lot of times these are the individuals that will end up abducting, raping, and killing. So we do have the bad, really, really bad strangers out there that, you know, that are out there that we still need to teach our kids about. But it's the other 60, 70% that are people that they know. And usually people that the parents know.
Uncle so-and-so or the new boyfriend or, I mean, whoever it might be, a neighbor.
Exactly, exactly. And that's the scary thing when you start thinking about it because, you know, and hopefully if, you know, the people that are listening to your show, that if they don't get anything out of this, that they end up talking to their kids about sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how young they might be. I mean, if the child's old enough to understand what a private part is, parents need to talk to them about it. Because I see this a lot where parents think that the child's protected. And then what ends up happening is the perpetrator will play a game with the 1-year-old or 2-year-old. And, you know, the game is touching. The game is photographing them naked. The game could be sexual acts. And the child, they think it's a game. This is fun
help
stuff.
Find my dog or my cat. I mean, what has replayed? What? How can we protect very young children like that as opposed to maybe what was taught earlier? Are there new strategies, new techniques?
I think the biggest thing is you got to continually talk to your kids about sexual abuse. I mean, it's just not one thing you know, it's like sex education, and most parents, it's, you know, if I can do this for 10 minutes and I'm done, I don't have to talk about it anymore. But with sexual abuse, it's something that the child, especially with, and we really haven't even talked about internet yet,
as far as
a little bit about chat rooms, but, you know, the whole idea of it's just made it easier for molesters now to molest kids, and if they don't know what to do, if they don't know what it means to be groomed, or, you know, this is not a game, or no one's supposed to be touching me, or no one's supposed to be photographing me, then they don't know. And it's just one of those things that to build a good relationship with your child, they have to know that they can come to you and talk to you if something happens. And, you know, especially with the younger children, and, you know, we had a case of a 4-year-old that was being And the reason I know this for a fact is because I saw the video, and that's the bad part about the Internet Crimes Task Force and most law enforcement now. I mean, we're going to be tasked. For years, we heard the stories of the kids telling us that they were raped, which were bad enough to deal with. But now with the Internet and with child pornography, you're seeing the outcome. You're seeing the tape. You're seeing the pictures. And there was a child, and she, you know, was in a bathtub, and she was having a great time. When I'm assuming that it was dad, based on the body language, dad never shows his face on the video, but, you know, she's having a great time, and they're playing with each other, and dad's playing with her, and then dad ends up taking her in the bedroom and raping her, and all of which is caught on tape, and all of which the little 4-year-old thinks that this is a game, because she just didn't know any better.
Wow.
So with parents, they just need to continually talk to their kids about sexual abuse. It's just not something that can be done one time and be done with. So you ask about child molesters, and I kind of alluded to that, but let me just go into that real briefly.
Okay.
There's two kind of broad categories of child molesters. You've got what's called a situational molester,
mm-hmm.
and you've got what's called a preferential molester. Some of the commonalities that they do share is, number one, they both rape kids. So they're both equally as bad, and they just both do bad things. Number two is, for the most part, they're not into hurting kids. And that's a bizarre thought when you think about, this guy raping this 2-year-old or 4-year-old or however age, you know, in their minds, they don't want to hurt this child because, you know, if they hurt the child, then, you know, a couple things could happen. The child, you could see physical injuries, and someone's going to see that, or the child's going to get upset and tell someone.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are ways of being able to satisfy themselves without hurting a child. And then also, in their minds, they're thinking that this is justified. This is, I'm benefiting this child by helping them have sex. I don't know how many guys would tell me that as a 13-year-old or I think the lowest, youngest that we ever did were like 7-year-old male. And the guys would say, you know, by me helping you, you know, teach you how to have sex, it's going to be beneficial. But that's the thought processes that go through these individuals' heads. And a lot of times when we think about that, we think about, you know, the weird guy at the park, you know, that looks like a child molester. But, I mean, that's so far from the truth because of these individuals could be, you know, someone that we work with. It could be someone that we live with. It could be our preacher, the priest that we're going to see tomorrow morning. It could mm-hmm. be anybody. So with the situational molester, this is the individual that for the most part, will end up molest his or her own kids. It's the availability. I mean, they've got a desire to have sex, but it doesn't really have to be with kids. It's the availability of, you know, my wife is at work and I'm home all day looking at pornography and then school bus lets my daughter off at 3 o'clock, and then I end up perping against her, or I'm holding my baby in my hand, or whatever the case may be. It's the whole, I've got the situation is there, I've got the urge, and I end up acting against my child.
So this guy just has an insatiable need, and he justifies, well, to fulfill that need, and my wife isn't here, or I'm not going to go out and get a prostitute because my child is more available, or whatever.
Exactly. And these individuals usually will have fewer victims. And the reason being is these kids are going to grow up and they're going to move out of the house and or they're going to run away. And, you know, especially if we've got any law enforcement listening today, you know, I always try to challenge law enforcement. And runaway kids is a big issue for us.
Yeah.
A lot of times these kids will run away for a day or two, then they'll come back and they'll repeat itself over and over again. And to challenge law enforcement that when we find these kids and they do come home is to sit down with them and find out why are they running away. I mean, it could be just an adolescent kid that's going through some, you know, normal problems, or they're running away from a problem. And a lot of times that problem is sexual abuse.
Is that part of the typical protocol? When they, you know,
some departments
check those areas?
Well, it should be, but every department's different, and some departments really have taken a big stance in this. I know Dallas, big, huge city department, and they do that. I mean, I would hope that most would, but unfortunately, I think that it just doesn't happen. But so that's the situational molester. That's doesn't have to have sex with kids, but it's the whole availability. So then we switch gears a little bit to the preferential molester.
Mm-hmm.
This is the person who does have a desire to have sex, and that desire, for the most part, is having sex with kids. And that's where usually when I make that statement, you know, I'll see people, you can just tell that they're thinking about that weird guy at the park for sure. And this is where, I mean, we've got to stop thinking that way, because this could be anybody. I mean, it could be people that we work with that, I mean, it's just
the guy
could be
in the three-piece suit, right?
Exactly. The person that we would least ever suspect a lot of times is this person. That's the wild thing about this. This person, for the most part, will have age and gender preferences, and they could be really broad. I mean, like, okay, I like 13-year-old or 13 to 18-year-old girls, or as specific as a 4-year-old blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy. Now, I'm not going to mess with that child when he's 1, 2, and 3. I want a 4-year-old. And then when he turns 5, I don't want to mess with him when he's 5 either. So I've already got to be figuring out, how do I get rid of this child? I mean, how do I threaten, how do I manipulate for this child not to tell? And with the younger kids, it's just going to be easier, I mean, to lie to them or do whatever. And that's the scary thing about the preferential molesters, because they've got the ability to molest an unbelievable large amount of kids because of the fact they've got to fill a slot. They've got to fill a need. And that need, whatever, you know, if it's 4-year-old boys or 4-year-old girls, I've got to fill that slot. And so that's really scary.
Well, how does that happen, Jim? Is that, I mean, the people in mental health circles, is there something to equate that very specific preference?
That, I don't know. I don't know that answer there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that's, you know, if you could really figure that out, we'd definitely be far ahead of the game. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know
what drives that. And that's what's weird when you start seeing some of the perpetrator and some of the profiles and some of the people that have been arrested. It's like, wow, I mean, how could this preacher, how could this priest, how could this school teacher do this? I mean, it just mm-hmm. doesn't make any sense.
No, it's super scary when it's people who we trust our children with. Like you say,
exactly.
Teachers, priests, it goes on and on. And those are the people that we put confidence in that they're not going to hurt our children, that they're either teaching them or guiding them or whatever the case might be.
Or a coach or something, yeah.
Exactly. And to, you know, whether it be male or female, it happens either way. And
right.
I think, to me, that's the scariest part. How closely can you check out a person or an organization before you allow your children to be a part of it?
Well, and that's scary in itself, because, I mean, most organizations now do a pretty good job with background checks or, arrest records. The sad thing is if most of these individuals, they've never been arrested. They're good at what they do, okay? I mean, we would look at law enforcement.
Stay under the radar and blend in into the community?
Exactly. I mean, in law enforcement, you know, we would do more thorough backgrounds when one of these cases would come up, and things that we were looking at, you know, for, you know, guys and women like that move a lot,
mm-hmm.
like a teacher or a preacher or whoever that, okay, why is it? Why is it, you know, in 20 years you've been in 20 different cities, okay? I mean, maybe you're a bad preacher, or is something happening? Because what will happen in some of these organizations, and we saw it with Penn State, and unfortunately there are probably hundreds of thousands of organizations out there that have dealt with it this way, where a child comes forward, discloses, and parents meet with the deacons or whoever at the church. And, you know, the parents are, you know, we're not sure if we want to proceed with this, but we want something done. And, of course, then the deacons or the church goes, well, you know, give them the ultimatum. You leave or you're going to get arrested. And
mm-hmm.
so that's their ticket to leave to go to someplace else and set up shop there. And
wow.
So, yeah, that's a scary thing. And like you mentioned, you know, about the people that we know. And this is, we start thinking about grooming now. This is, it's not only grooming the kids, but it's grooming the parents.
Mm-hmm.
You have to trust me. I mean, if I can gain your trust as a scout leader or as the teacher or whoever, then I've got it made. Because you're not going to question, you know, if your child stays after practice or stays, you know, for math tutoring or whatever. And I always tell parents that, you know, a red flag should come up. It may not mean anything, but if I find someone that wants to spend more time with my child than I do, a red flag should come up. And, you know, we've got busy parents, and that plays into the hands of molesters, too, because parents are so busy, you know, barely, you know, getting kids picked up and you know, getting them their homework done or whatever, that, you know, just plays into the hands of the molesters, too, because then they can spend time with the child. And
or they offer
to
do
them.
Too much or, yeah, extend themselves so they have access, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And, you know, what's
right.
sad is we've got dedicated coaches, we've got dedicated teachers that just love helping kids.
Yeah.
And it's so sad when I
it's
make
a bad
these
name.
Types. Exactly. I mean, it makes me so sad when I make these statements, because if I'm the child molester, I'm going to be the teacher. I got to be somewhere around kids, okay, to make this really work well. And that's just, it's just sad because of all the people that I've known, from teachers to preachers to whatever, that, you know, would never, ever touch a child. But they were great with kids and great helping
yeah.
kids and affected a lot of lives. So that's a scary thing. And we start thinking about grooming, and the examples I like to use are like a dating relationship. I mean, if you know, think back to your dating years as a young person or even as an adult. I mean, you meet someone that, okay, you know, kind of like her, and try to get some more information about her or him and you know, finally ask them out. And, you know, it wasn't the first night that you'd go right and have sex. I mean, usually it was a long process of, you know, movies and dinners and holding hands and kiss goodnights and that slow, slow process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing that will happen with these kids. You know, meet a child online, especially, or any place. You know, a lot of kids, especially at age 13, 14, 15, 16, normal adolescents, they've got some self-esteem issues, especially the girls, guys too. And then, you know, you start saying nice things to them and start building their self-esteem up. And, I mean, it's just going to be that slow process of being able then to try to meet up with that child. And then I look at, you know, the analogies of, you know, some people when they're dating and when you're not only dating one girl, you had a girlfriend, but then you met another one. So you're trying to date two girls at one time, okay? And that kind of an analogy of that second one was always real secretive because you don't want to get found out. So, you know, you had to be very careful. You had to really plan out your events and so on that you could be with this girl. And the same thing with these kids. And I've heard, you know, just horrific stories of, you know, of soccer coaches. And this one guy that was at one of the conferences this year was talking about, you know, how he developed this relationship with his soccer coach because the parents were going through a divorce. So there's some issues at home. He loved soccer. He loved to be able to play soccer. And then this coach took some extra time and, you know, stayed with him after school and or after practice. And then he would sit in his car after practice and talk with him. And because the parents were all so busy and fighting and stuff that they never wanted to talk. And he found someone. He found someone to talk to. And this happened over a several-month period where, you know, this kid was just slowly being groomed, and to the point where there was a sleepover at the YMCA, I guess it was for sports sleepover or whatever, and you're supposed to be accompanied by a parent. And the soccer coach met with this boy's dad, and the dad couldn't go, and the soccer coach was, I can pretend like I'm his uncle. And, of course, dad trusted him. And mm-hmm. as his pretending to be his uncle goes to this the sleepover, and that's where he was raped. And
wow.
the wild thing about that story, and a great analogy, is afterwards the child realized, I mean, you know, something happened, and need to tell someone, but he was afraid to tell because he was being threatened by the coach. And all of a sudden, he stopped going to the soccer practice. He refused to go, and, you know, the parents are wondering, you know, what's going on there. And until finally one day he rode his bike through the school parking lot on the way home, and in that parking lot was the coach's vehicle with another child inside the vehicle. And so when we talked about these preferential molesters, a lot of times it's not just going to be one child that they're seeing. It's
yeah.
going to be multiple kids at one time, you know, that they're grooming and trying
it's
to...
It's a perpetual thing, it sounds like, Jim, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. Is the incidence higher for the situational or the preferential, or is it about equal in terms of...
I would say probably as equal. I mean, we see in law enforcement,
yeah.
we investigate a lot of situational molesters, a lot
yeah.
of parent. But then we're seeing more and more of the preferential, and there's more of them probably out there. It's
mm-hmm.
just getting caught. It's just finding out. You know, with law enforcement, you know, I challenge them too, is you, if you do have a child disclose, and it is a teacher or a preacher, whoever, I mean, be thinking that there are other victims out there. It's not just the one victim
sure.
that you're dealing with.
Not a one-time
you know,
thing. Well, we have about, I don't know, 17 minutes left of the show or whatever, and I'm wondering if we can talk a bit about what kind of red flags or what should parents do proactively, and maybe talk some more about the internet in terms of what should they do so that these child molesters, you can prevent or them from having access to the best of your ability.
Right. Great question, because
we see now probably
the two groups that know the technology the best
yeah.
are our kids and child molesters. And parents, a lot of times they're in the complete dark. I'll buy my child a cell phone. I'll buy them the iPad or whatever, and, you know, I'm going to trust them with it. I've got a good kid. I don't have to really worry about this at all. And the sad thing is, if I were to tell parents now, they need to be detectives. You, especially, I mean, the norm now is probably 7, 8 years old. Kids are getting cell phones. I mean, my kids were like sophomore in college before they got their first cell phone.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's just unbelievable, okay? And so, yeah, you can trust your child. And you may have the best child ever. And okay, why should I pick up their cell phone? Why should I look at their internet sites? And I'll give you a great example. I teach, and I'll tell the parents that are listening, if you've bought your child a cell phone, and I don't care how old they are, if they're living under your roof and you've bought them the cell phone, that the cell phone should have a cell phone bedtime. And what I mean by that is whatever time you choose, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, the cell phone stays on the kitchen table or the dining room table, and the child goes into their bedroom without the cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot the parents that have done this at an early age, they really have no issues about the kids, you know, complying, because the kids know. My mom, my dad, they're going to look at the cell phone. But, of course, the parents that have not done this, they're going to have a little bit of an issue trying to get this done. And the example is I did a conference this past spring, and a social worker who was in the class goes home, and she's got a 10-year-old daughter. And so she ends up telling the 10-year-old daughter, hey, I learned this at the conference, and we're going to implement this tonight, that the cell phone stays on the kitchen table when you go into bed. And, of course, the child gets super upset, and, you know, the big fight ensues between mom and the 10-year-old, but mom finally wins out. Child goes in her bedroom crying because she doesn't have her cell phone. So mom starts looking at the cell phone, and there are numbers on there that she doesn't recognize. And there are some out-of-state numbers that she doesn't recognize. Now, why would my 10-year-old be calling people out-of-state, okay? And while she's got the cell phone in her hand, she gets a text message. And the text message goes something to the effect that, remember, I'm going to call you at 10:30. And so mom's really interested now. And so 10:30 comes along, and the phone rings, and it's an adult male. This child had gotten into a chat room. Kid chat room, met an adult male and started chatting, being groomed by this guy. And plus, what these individuals will do, these preferential molesters, is they've got to have, I mean, they've got their friends that they work with that they really can't tell, hey, I'm a child molester. But then at somewhere in their lives, they're going to have a close-knit group of friends that they can tell, hey, I'm a child molester, because they do the same things. Because what they'll do a lot of times is share their kids. Hey, I got your daughter to take her shirt off today, and then my friend ends up trying to get her to do something else tomorrow.
Jesus.
So anyways, with this 10-year-old, this group of guys, they were trying to manipulate her into meeting her. And if mom would not have picked that cell phone up and looked at it, she would never have known. And so parents really need to take an active role. We used to teach, and we still do, with the computers being in a common place, like the kitchen or whatever, so you could see things when you walk by. And that's great, but you've given them many computers now in the form of cell phones that you're not monitoring. And I mean, it's just going to be so easy, like in this case, for these guys to figure that out and have free access to the kids.
So at that time for a phone, putting it in, a public place, and they can review it when the child goes to bed, what other kinds of things might there be?
As far as computer usage, just to find out, what sites are they visiting. I mean, there are all kinds of really cool programs out there that you can see. As a parent, you could see everything and anything that's been typed on your computer. And, with the cell phones, unfortunately, as parents, we're kind of behind a little bit because of the fact that you buy your child a cell phone. It's just like me buying a cell phone or upgrading. It takes me, 2 years to figure out how it operates, let alone buying my child a new one and then trying to figure out how it operates. And these kids are smart, and there are, in fact, for some of the smartphones, the iPhones and so on, there are some apps that you can download now that if I were to look at my son's cell phone, I would see this app among all the other apps they probably have on their cell phone, and if I clicked on it, it would look like an app to download music or adjust the volume settings on the phone. On the app, and you can actually adjust the volumes on the phone. However, if I click on a little tab inside that app, it's going to ask me for a password. And what that app is designed to do is that I can then hide my files and pictures or nasty stuff I don't want anybody else to see.
Really?
So that's even scarier because as a parent, you could be looking at something, and if your kid is smart enough, they could be hiding stuff on their phone.
Discovered this in the course of, working a case and said, oh, look what happened with this app, right?
Exactly.
Wow. Well,
and to give you another example is it's not just the cell phones. Now we've got all these gaming sites. It used to be like with Xbox Live or whatever, any of these sites, it used to be you just played the game. And of course, now you can get online and play people from all over the world, and now you can actually see them as you play the game. Well, if I'm a child molester at 3:00 on a weekday, and I like 10, 11, and 12-year-old boys, I'm going to be on Xbox Live because these kids come home from school and they love playing the game. It's just a cool game to them. And a great example, I can't remember what state, I want to say Wisconsin or Minnesota, somewhere in that area. Dad buys his kids the best Xbox Connects or whatever where you can see the other player and stuff. And it's a great babysitter for parents. We can buy them all these really cool stuff. So dad comes home from work, and he hears an adult male's voice coming from his living room. He walks into the living room, and there on his widescreen TV is his son is playing Xbox Live, is an adult male who is masturbating in front of his kid.
Oh.
So, you know, dad's freaked because, you know, he said, you know, I think his comment was, I've allowed a molester to come into my home because I bought my kids this Xbox Kinect. And so, you know, of course, he rips the internet out of the house and you know, but that's the avenues, and that's why it's not just the cell phones, it's not just the computer itself, but it's the gaming sites, it's all these sites that your kids play and use, just monitor. I mean, just keep an active role of who are they communicating with? Because
so you're constantly having to be the parent police in like almost everything they do, but you can't like control their every waking minute in their environments. You know, there's got to be that fine line or whatnot. I don't know. Parents and grandparents have such a hard job anyway.
Sure.
I totally you know, commend them for what they do. Not being a parent, but in any case, it's got to be awfully, awfully hard. Jim, can you talk a little bit about once one of these child molesters, whether it be situational or preferential, are arrested, what are the myriad of charges in terms of conviction rate, and you know, how long do they actually stay in jail and those kinds of things?
Well, every state's a little bit different, and you know, what we'd end up doing in our county a lot of times is, when we were being the first, no one in our county encountered this, you know, including our judges and prosecutors and stuff, as far as the chat room cases. And then once that started, though, it was a lot of municipalities, was what they'll do is the prosecutor will meet with the defense attorney right away and say, it's either you take this deal or we're going to give this to the feds, the FBI, because federally, usually the penalties are more enhanced.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of times we do it that way and just let them take care of it. But every state's a little bit different, and it just really depends on, you know, what acts, you know, is there child pornography involved? Most of the time when we take these individuals' computers, we're going to find child pornography. The preferential molester, pretty much you're always going to find it. I'm sure there might be some cases that you don't, but in my experience, you always found it. And so it really depended on, you know, what acts that they actually did, and especially with the child pornography, if they had that on their computers too.
Right. Well, you have such a plethora of really good written information too. I wondered, is any of the information that, like, for instance, you have imparted to us for presentations or shows and whatnot, is that available for general public to view? Can you give us some information with respect to how parents might be able to access this? Because the information I'm looking at, and this is a short version, is very detailed, and it's very good information maybe to have just as a reference.
Well, I tell you, if the probably the best website the parents could go to and look at would be missingkids.com, www.missingkids, all one word, .com.
Okay.
This is the National Center for Missing Exploited Children. And on their website, and of course, you'll be able to see all the missing kids and do searches there, but there are all kinds of good tabs to look at for parents, for kids, for law enforcement, for anybody, as far as looking at stats, looking at how I can better protect my kids from molesters. And in fact, there's a couple of different programs that they offer called NetSmarts, and you can get it through that website, where there's NetSmarts 411, I think it is, where parents can ask questions, and there's all really good information on that site.
Cyber tip line too. That's available. It's mandated by Congress, right?
Correct. And that's where missingkids.com, you can get access to that. And that's where parents and kids or whoever that, you know, someone sending them raunchy information or pornography or whatever, that they can report either through the internet or call the number. And what they'll do is, through the National Center, is they'll start the investigation, and then they'll refer that to the local law enforcement where that case evolved from. So it's a great resource for just about anybody.
Collaboration.
What's
with
that?
Each other. They work in collaboration with each other, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Good. What kind of contact information would you like to give with regard to yourself? Do you do a blog that you post that people can read in general? I mean, you have such good information.
Well, you know, I haven't got that far as a blog.
You haven't? Okay.
No, I haven't.
You're presenting all the time.
I am. I mean, my website. You know, anybody could go onto the website and. Some of the information is there. If not, they could email me, and I would love to send them some of my outlines.
Why don't you give that to us now? We have a few more minutes here.
Okay.
What is that?
It's Holler Training, all one word, H-O-L-L-E-R training,
mm-hmm.
.com.
And are you available for other law enforcement, police departments, other conferences, parent groups, I mean, in terms of if they wanted you to do it, because, as I said, it's a very dynamic personal presentation that you do, and I think people really, you know, it's a whole different format than what we're doing now. Are you available for that
sure.
as well?
Oh,
yeah?
yes, very much so.
Okay, so how would they get, they would go to that website?
Go to the website and email me, and my telephone numbers are on the website and stuff. They can call
and work
something out.
Good. Delilah, we have a few minutes left here at the end. Are there other things that maybe you'd like to ask or bring out at this juncture?
Well, I think Jim has really covered a lot of great information for us and for all of our listeners. It's just, it's so much. It's just so overwhelming to
even
think about.
The surface yet.
I know.
Exactly. Well, and then, you know, with the work that you do, I'm sure you see a lot of cases where kids are groomed and lured into human trafficking, and then that opens up another whole can of worms there. So,
sure.
You know, it all boils down to being, as parents, as careful as you can be with your kids, but even though... You know, we put our kids in a little bubble in the house. It's still no guarantee.
Exactly.
No, especially today if you've got an active child that wants to be out there and doing things and whatnot. But like I say, there are at least 10, 15, 20 characteristics that you give for each of these molesters, as well as the seduction process, as well as, you know, you really detail a lot of the information that we didn't get to specifically. So I would encourage everyone to go to Jim's site, and you can see some of the information here, and, you know, use it wisely, because don't think that everyone you meet up with, you know, suddenly, oh my
sure.
God, he's a molester, right? I guess it's hard sometimes, because, you know, is it a true red flag, or am I being overprotective, et cetera?
It's even harder for us in law enforcement, because we've got gut feelings, and sometimes some of us have some guts that we deal with, but we have a true gut feeling, and sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong.
Sometimes you're right.
Yeah.
Well, is there any particular, we got about a minute and a half, one message that you'd like to convey to our national audience that maybe you don't get a chance to, that maybe, you know, we haven't covered, you don't really realize? What message would you want to tell parents in general?
Develop that relationship with your child. Talk with your children and continue to build their self-esteem up. Don't just assume that everything is honky-dory. Continue to build their self-esteem up. They've got to hear it, because if they don't hear it from you, they'll hear it from somebody else. And that somebody else could very easily be one of these molesters.
That certainly is so true. And we thank you so very much.
Sure.
This hour has flown by.
It has.
I'll keep in touch with you. We're going to be doing our blog tomorrow. We'll embed the podcast. We'll send it. In the meantime, please go to www.donnagore.com. Please read my blogs. Listen to our Shattered Lives radio show. Visit imaginepublicity.com. And be sure to tune in next Saturday evening. So I say good night. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Delilah.
All right, thank you.
We'll talk to you later. Thanks
All right,
so
great.
Much.
Thanks.
Okay, good night.
Bye.